The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
With us this morning, political leader of the Trinidad Humanity Campaign, that's Marcus Ramkisoon. Welcome back to our program. It's nice to have you with us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, man. And I was about to ask you just now to jump in to respond to the caller, but you did an excellent job there, realistically. And, you know, this morning with the other guests, yes, which you'll have to reschedule, I'm sure, but the topic this morning was really supposed to be, you know, after politics.
Mm-hmm.
We, the leaders of the smaller parties, or some of the smaller parties, were supposed to be here to potentially, I suppose, discuss what we think and what we feel. And, you know, what you've just said has, you know, is leading right into what I think and what I feel, you know, at least, and what my party looks at. Because, you know, we campaign heavily, especially on, as you know, or right here on this program also, on actual measures to at least curb or address the heavy crime situation in the country. I mean, we talked about 1,000 cameras in our electoral district costing less than $2 million, things that England, which is a country we like to follow in terms of legislation and practice all the time, has done all over their country and has achieved great success for it. Stated costs, less than $2 million for 1,000 cameras, you know, not $20 and $30 million. We talk about the increased patrols and visibility of the police, all these different things. And, you know, when I went about campaigning, at least, and this time, Satish, I walked everywhere in my electoral district and I put one of our little flyers with the mini manifesto in everybody's mailbox I could reach. And I talked to, I would say, a couple hundred people easily. I didn't go with any music truck or mic. I actually bought a megaphone and didn't use it. Felt a little bad about disturbing people in the house. I figured they would get me the flyer and read it. But the people that I did talk to expressed such sincere support for the measures that we were promoting that for the first time, because, you know, I'm a realist, I usually come on the public and say, you know, if I get more than 100 votes, I'd be surprised because I understand the politics of politics and the reality of it. But for the first time, I said to myself, I might actually have a chance. From what I heard, and then to see what I saw in the results overall. You know, we at the THC got 234 votes from four electoral districts, 22, 24, 94, and 94. Right, that was the numbers. And, you know, that shows basically, and, you know, you look at all the other smaller parties or third, fourth, fifth, whatever you want to call them. And it shows that the people, just not the vast majority of people in this country, seems content with the status quo and the way things are. And I am amazed by it because it seems to come down yet again to this two-party system. And if I vote for this one, the other party go away. And if I vote for a third party, it'll split the vote from my party, even in this local government election. So to be honest with you, I don't think there will be any difference in 2 years in the next general election. I think that the vast majority of people will continue to vote in this two-party system and believe. And, you know, the strange thing about it is, I have a bachelor's and a master's. I'm currently doing two more master's degrees and a PhD. I keep in good academic circles, people who really intelligent. You know, I could, you know. And it surprised me. I mean, a lot of the people I know, yes, are interested in a third-party option, some of the things we had to say, but I also have family and friends that are, you know, some of the brightest. In one case, there's a brain surgeon. The brightest of the brightest. And even on that level of intelligence, somebody I respect highly, you know, those individuals are still caught up in the trap, I would say, of this. Oh, what would a third party be able to do? We must go back and vote our party of the two, knowing full well that you know, one of those parties or both of those parties have had their chance and have anything substantial enough to make a change. One of the things I said on one of our live meetings on YouTube over the campaign period was that, you know, this crime is affecting everybody, rich and poor. I mean, to the point that we saw what happened just, I think it's yesterday or the day before with someone in West Moorings that is related to someone at the NIB and all that stuff, right? So it's happening more often. Just a couple months ago, another family in West Moorings was attacked in their home. And that family is related to one of our ministers. You know, I had to say, I mean, is it, how much closer to home does it need to get for some people to really realize that we need change? And even those in that position of management in governance, I don't like to say in power, right? Because the position is management. But how much closer? And I was a little upset because I consider that minister a person that I'm well acquainted with, and I was upset that something wasn't done at the time. Even, you know, maybe it would have seemed too subjective if they made some move, but come on, the government in management now needs to pick up on what it's doing. And you know, I've said it a number of times too, if this government, even, and I don't campaign or talk derogatorily about other parties, you notice I don't even call the name of the other parties, right? I don't do that. But if the government in charge now were to address the crime situation just a little bit, take us down from 7 to 10 murders a week down to 5, at least, the smaller parties like us would have no chance in an election, you know.
You know, I'll tell you something, yeah? It's worrisome how the status quo is maintained.
Mm-hmm.
But citizens have been conditioned. And I don't know if we had the conversation. I had a conversation with somebody.
Yeah, I remember you used the word conditioned, and it's a good word. Yeah.
The population has been conditioned to think a certain way. And we do not have critical thinkers. We don't, because you can tell.
Yeah.
From all that is taking place, you have people with great ideas, but great ideas don't get you in office.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sad reality of the country that we live in.
True.
Because we have so many great ideas that come out from the various entities. But unless you're part of the UNC or the PNM, you have no hope again in governance.
Mm-hmm.
That is not something that is going to happen in this country. Tobago's a two-party state as well. Because every election, THA or general, whatever else, you have the PNM on one side and you have somebody who comes up to challenge the PNM. So it's a two-party state.
Right.
That's
right.
Basically what Tobago is as well.
Right.
The difference with Tobago is everybody over there is Tobagonian.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority one race.
Right.
So they don't have the race issue to deal with as we have in Trinidad.
Yeah.
But
it's really a problem. That issue is such an, you know, I have to tell people when I go out usually, and you know, I had a lot of talking on the campaign trail, so I was able to. For most of you who don't know, I have very long dreadlocks, and my heritage also is East Indian descent. I'm of East Indian descent. And this is something in this country the East Indian people don't like. They associate it with Afro-Trinidadians, right? And the Afro-Trinidadians have a lot of issues with the Indo-Trinidadians. I've had a number of girlfriends in the past from in the Afro-Trinidadian community, and I know their families well. I've seen it. I've seen it from all sides, you know, friends, girlfriends, people, everything, you know. And I keep this as, and then look, when I went to Grenada, studied in Grenada for 3 years, which is mostly an Afrocentric population, and when I stopped by a shop or a parlor and they recognized my accent as Trinidadian, they'd be like, oh, you're Trinidadian, what are you doing here? I'd be like, well, I'm in med school. Oh, you're in the med school, what are you doing? You're playing cricket? No. You doing maintenance? No. Studying pre-med. They're like, what? And they step back because apparently on that island, anybody with dreadlocks there shouldn't have the capacity to be educated. And that in itself is another stereotype over there. But yet still, when I go to India, which I've done once in 2011, and I well expecting coming from a population like this, you know, some, you know, derogatory looks maybe even from that population with my hairstyle. Nobody did that. Everybody clasped their hands together and bowed their heads and said, Baba. Because in India, holy men keep hairstyles.
They do have the
hairstyles. And when I've been to Africa recently, it was a thing there. People loved it. And I've been to China also in 2011. And people also looked at it with admiration. You know, a whole train station stopped when I was taking down my hair to tie it up and took pictures and so. So to see what we see in this little country, you know, when Jamaica, I think I used that example here on your show already, and my Jamaican friend, I pointed out, hey, look, some East Indian people, but I mean, Indian people, that's what we say in Trinidad, right? And you know, I hadn't seen it in Jamaica for the time I was there. And the second time I did it, he pointed out to me that, you know, we in Jamaica don't refer to people by ethnicity. I said, well, how do you call them? He said, well, we're all Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so bad. You know, so again, it's all the conditioning and the continued, nobody seems to want to change their thinking, their mentality, their ideals. I mean, again, just listening on the campaign trails to the complaints from both sides of you know, the one party complaining about the other complaining about the other in terms of councillors. And you know, I asked the question, but what change do you expect to see in the next 3 years if you put back either one of those people? One of the first things I had to say along the trail was, look, if you've seen 100 faces before, it's only two parties you've seen. But again, looking at the numbers, looking at the PEP votes, NTA is claiming to be the third largest party in the country, but the NTA is now part of the UNC. So, and I would say, just from real political analysis into it, that the PEP is actually the third largest party in the country.
Well, you see, Gary Griffin making that claim is an interesting one, because mm-hmm. he didn't fight this election on his own.
Right,
you really can't tell if that's NTA support or that's UNC
PNM
support.
Strongholds, because that's where the UNC put them. The UNC decided, okay, we will pull our candidates from these PNM strongholds, and these are the only times that I call the party's names there, folks. We are in political analysis now. We're not talking about campaigning or anything. We're actually analyzing. They decided, okay, we'll pull our candidates from there. We'll lend our support and ask our UNC supporters to support Gary in there. And what happened? From what I understand, Gary's party got less votes in those areas than the UNC candidates mm-hmm. would have gotten in those areas.
That is exactly what happened.
That is a big statement. That shows that the UNC, not all of the UNC supporters are for Gary, even with their party's full support behind him.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting development. But we're coming close to the end of our interview. I have a couple of messages before news. But what's the future now? Because this has... I remember us speaking prior, and you were full of anticipation because of what people were saying. And you're not alone.
Right.
There are many people who were saying the same thing. They want change. They're fed up with the two parties and them nobody helping and all of that kind of thing. But the results showed us that people's mouth was all over the place, but their finger ended up in the same place that it was all the time. What's the future now for you? This must be a real blow. I've spoken to someone. It's very demoralizing to have such a campaign run, to hear that on the ground and then have this result. Does it change your focus, your agenda, or anything like that?
Well, again, this was the fourth election we've competed in. We've contested three general elections, and I, again, have always been a realist. I've never been one to say we're going to contest a seat and win it. I've walked out of a meeting in 2015 with some smaller parties where everyone was convinced they were going to win their seat as first-time contenders, and I said that was a little too delusional for me, so I left. Again, understanding the politics of politics. But when you look at the actual numbers, our party in particular was looking at this local government election to guide us as to where the population is, what the population is thinking. Are they ready for a third party? Are they interested? Is the PEP or even Gary to that extent or any of the other entities going to receive any substantial? We knew none of them would have probably won their seats. Maybe Gary, because UNC was supporting them, and maybe Philip won seat, hopefully, right? But when you look at the numbers of votes that they got out of the total of number of voters, it's roughly the same as what you would see. I mean, few did better, we did better, a number of us did better. But when you multiply that by 30% of voters, you multiply that by three or four then to say, okay, now, if you had the full turnout of voters, what would happen? It's not going to be enough still. And seeing the vast number that are voting, the two large parties, we at the THC will rethink and reorganize our strategy for the next election in 2 years. It's too soon, in my opinion, as the leader of the party, for the population to change its mind and say, okay, now in this general election, we're going to go with a third party. And I don't think that even if all the small parties band together, because the problem under there is really leadership and who will lead. But I don't even think even if everybody went all neutral and it went all nice, that the population would vote that direction. I think they would still think to themselves, oh, if I don't vote this party, the other one would win. And they would go back to the two-party system. So maybe, I'm saying it, because we've said in the past that recycling politicians, meaning that people who've had the opportunity and did not do what they're supposed to do, should not be back in the position of management. But if you all as the population are only going to vote in the two large parties, then maybe the only hope for us as small parties is to join with those large parties at some level. So I intend to think about it a lot more. 2 years is not a long time. So we have to start thinking seriously. And maybe start having conversations. Now, again, I'm familiar with people in both of the large parties, and I don't campaign derogatorily for that purpose, to maintain our relationships with these two parties, because we are political activists in the end. We want to make sure that our policies and the best ideas get through, so we try to keep things all neutral. So maybe we could start some discussions, maybe not. We'll see.
I know that we were supposed to have a panel on this morning, and we've rescheduled the other guests, so I'm sure that when we have that discussion, which we will, You'll be back with us. Thank you so much for being with us here this morning.
Appreciate it, man. Have a good morning. Yes.
Couple messages to take us up to the news, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.